I'm Steve Potter, and welcome to Cityscape. Later in the hour, a conversation with video artist Zlatko Čosić. His upcoming exhibition, Still Adjusting, reflects his own experience assimilating into American culture after fleeing the former Yugoslavia in the 1990s. He describes his journey as a performance and being caught between the past and the present. In our monthly soundbite segment with Sauce Magazine, we're going to explore the ones to watch in 2014 from the Planter's House bartender Mandy Kowalski and executive chef Bradley Hoffman. We'll join Sauce Magazine's Julie Cohen for a look at what to expect as far as food and drink in the new year. We begin with a dramatic play about a February 1965 meeting between Malcolm X and Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. That meeting of the minds never happened, but what if? Jeff Stetson's The Meeting is up and running through January the 26th at the Black Rep's new home, the Emerson Performance Center at Harris Stowe State University. Matthew Galbraith plays Dr. King. Karamu Kush is Malcolm X. We welcome you both. I tripped over that first name a little bit. I'm still working on that, Karamu.
That was perfect. That was perfect.
I'll get better by the end of the segment. And the Black Rep founding director, Ron Himes, directs, and he's here too. Hi, Ron.
Hi, Steve.
As far as I know, these two men, Malcolm X and Dr. King, met very briefly in, I think it was 1965, outside of a hearing about the Civil Rights Act.
Right.
But it's more like a hello, how are you, and someone took a couple of photos. It wasn't a meeting.
Right. Just a passing. They just passed each other and, as you said, exchanged greetings, exchanged a handshake, and he actually left us with a great photo.
Isn't that almost odd, though? What do you all think? I mean, here are two men. I mean, they went about things in different ways, but I guess they sort of had the same goal, and they were contemporaries, and they lived at the same time. You would have thought there would have been meetings.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, you know, I think the big difference was, you know, time and the differences that, you know, one of them actually operated in the North primarily, mm-hmm. and Dr. King, you know, Malcolm primarily operated in the North, and Dr. King primarily operated in the South.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And Karamu, we were talking before we began, and you were talking about social media and Twitter and things. Yeah. Maybe with today's media, they would have been more connected.
Exactly. They would have been Twitter friends. Facebook friends.
Well, let's go back. I want to sort of share just a personal thing, and I think it might be a good jumping off point to start this, because my memories of the two gentlemen, I was a kid back in the 60s, and I went to grade school on the Jersey Shore, which wasn't far from Newark, New Jersey, and I remember I was glued to the TV every night, even as a kid, and there were a lot of, you know, racial issues at the time. There were a lot of race riots in Newark, so it was something I was very aware of. And I remember my impressions of those two men. I was 10 years old in 1965, so it was a kid. But Dr. King seemed like the good guy, and Malcolm X, although he made a very nice appearance, was a little scary. So can we start there?
Well, let me just say one thing. One thing that shows is, as we know today, is the power of the media.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Because that's how the media portrayed them. Yeah. And in the play, you know, they talk about being alternatives to each other. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so the media really did paint Malcolm as the evil one, you know, the one to be feared, the more dangerous one, and painted Dr. King as the more palatable one.
But isn't there some truth in that? Wasn't Dr. King, let you know, everybody get along, and Malcolm X, well, you know, I'm going to get in your face.
I think it was a matter of tactics. You know, they mm-hmm. they both had tactics to achieve a common goal, a common purpose. And again, like Ron just said, it's addressed in the play how they were employing certain means to get to a certain place. But even when King says, you know, as a man, I'm concerned about my family. I don't want to die. You know, I think any man can relate to that whole mm-hmm. idea of taking care of your family and not wanting to die, but having work to do that you know is really important. And this is the way I'm going to go about doing it, contrary to what you're doing, Malcolm. You know, so
Matthew, any thoughts?
I think Dr. King's view was probably a little more universal. There's one line in the play that says, Malcolm, you want to free blacks, and I want to free America. And I do think that's because he was a Baptist minister, so it's easy for him to be the good guy. And I think he was very interested in us sharing the unity of our spirit. You know, it precedes going on the just the fleshly and just the realm we're living in, but we're all connected in the spiritual realm. And I think that was his basis for unity, and I think that's why he was looked at as more of the good guy. But definitely getting to know more about Malcolm, that he had some wonderful, wonderful points and ideologies.
And maybe the play brings this out. That's a really interesting aspect, isn't it, Ron, that, of course, the two never had a real meeting, so no one really knows.
Right. And that's the thing I say. I mean, no one really knows whether they ever had a telephone conversation,
That's true.
Which is quite possible. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, so, you know, as far as we know, no, there was no public meeting. There was no broadcast meeting of the two. Mm-hmm. There were no photos of them, you know, in a coffee shop.
Ron, you know something? A meeting could have happened.
Exactly.
That we don't know about.
Exactly.
Exactly the way the play portrays it could have happened easily.
Yeah. But no, you know, as far as what history tells us is that there was never a meeting. And, you know, I'm sure that as more and more FBI files get released, we may learn of a meeting
at some point.
Because if there was one, we certainly know that the FBI were aware of it.
Even if there were, though, I think it would have been eerily similar to what
the play.
Jeff Stinson has dramatized.
I truly believe that.
Yeah.
Okay, well, tell me this. As a 10-year-old, too, I would have thought the two men would have been opposed. And maybe this is just a false impression, too. I would have thought that Dr. King disapproved of Malcolm X's tactics.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe vice versa. But I'm speaking as that 10-year-old. So what do you think?
I don't think that's completely wrong. Again, it's kind of like, you know, even to make it simple, it's like if I'm going downtown, you're going to say, hey, I'm taking the 64. I'm going to say, no, you should take the street. You know, it's like we both go in the same place, though, man. And Matt may say, no, Karamo, you need to be taking the 64. It's quicker. And I'm like, no.
That's a good point, though. They were both headed for the same destination.
Exactly.
That was their
Truly.
Goal.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let's talk about the play. It's the meeting at the Black Rep.
Mm.
So how did this meeting, the one on stage, come about? How did it happen that both these men meet in this Memphis motel room?
Well, I think that, you know, Jeff Stetson, who's the playwright, it happened in his mind. And, I mean, he's crafted it very, very well. In the play, the premise is that Malcolm X has invited Martin to come to Harlem to meet him at his hotel room where he's staying to have this meeting. And there's a third character in the play, actually, Rashad, who plays Malcolm X's bodyguard. And so before Dr. King arrives, there's a conversation between Malcolm X and his bodyguard, who cannot believe or understand why Malcolm would want to be meeting with Dr. King. You guys have nothing in common. You know, why are you meeting? Why are you wasting time meeting with him? And how do you know that he'll come? And Malcolm tells him, he'll come because I asked him to come. And I know that if he had asked me, I would go.
Hmm. Matthew, let me ask you first. Portraying Dr. King, how did you approach that? How did you get into that character?
Very well, I would say.
I'm sure.
Oh, well, first of all, I listened to a lot of sound bites and tried to understand his rhythm. And also just the play. It was written so well that it captures his rhythm. Mm-hmm. And just as you go through the play, understanding the heights and troughs of his vocal work, and you know, just doing all that to get to an end of what plays on stage, what is he like in person, or playing the man as opposed to playing the icon. So finding those balances and nuances, and Ron directing us, it was difficult, but I think we got to have a great product.
And of course, there's a lot of Dr. King on videotape
audio
tape, so you had that to go with. Can you give me an example when you mentioned the vocal aspect?
Well, the thing is, you have a lot of his speeches, and that's what we know him for. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, in the play, he's talking to another person. It's the man. And capturing that, and the man that could have done that did do the speeches in a conversational setting was a challenge and experience.
Right, because the Dr. King that we see in the speeches wouldn't necessarily sound like the guy
exactly.
in the hotel room.
Exactly, he wouldn't sit on the couch.
Yeah. Right. Well, Karamu, what about you? I mean, there's tape of Malcolm X, too, not as much. So how did you begin?
Well, actually, I think it's more about Malcolm than it is about King.
Definitely.
Conversational and his speeches. But I think an obvious trap to fall into, which Ron was very particular about directing us away from, is getting into this shouting type of thing where it's mm-hmm. like these guys are like going at each other with these speechy voices, you know, when where they're actually communicating with each other as brethren, you know. So I guess for me, the whole work or the beginning of the work was really about tapping into who is this man as a father, as a husband, as a man who lives in a certain time and recognizes certain ills in the culture. Mm-hmm. How does he approach that? And then, I mean, I think that when you're doing a historical person, you can't help but be affected by what you see out here in the world, or YouTube, what have you. But it's really about just trying to tap into that person's spirit.
Amen. Was Malcolm X's and Dr. King's dream any different when you get down to it or not?
When you get down to it, no. It was about liberation for all people,
right.
ultimately.
Civil rights and human rights.
Yeah.
And, you know, the play is actually set after Malcolm had gone to Mecca. And so Malcolm had had a personal transformation. Mm-hmm. And that transformation had changed a lot of the Malcolm X that was portrayed, you know, the militant, the separatist. And Malcolm had become more of a person who was universal in his approach to solving society's ills.
Mm. Mm-hmm. In the meeting, in the play, the mm-hmm. meeting, mm-hmm. do they have disagreements about the way they go about
Absolutely.
Reaching that goal?
Oh, yes, most definitely.
That's the drama of the piece.
Yeah. Okay, well, Karamu, what's Malcolm's biggest gripe against Dr. King?
Malcolm's biggest gripe against Dr. King, or there's a couple of them, but one in particular was he maintains that nobody ever got their freedom from singing. They got it from swinging. Mm. He believes that he uses actually President Kennedy as an example of somebody who's prepared to employ force and power to bring about some kind of change and also to defend themselves. I mean, Malcolm's whole thing was you can't really be a man of any kind of you just can't be a man if you're going to allow somebody to abuse your wife, abuse your children, abuse your family. Abuse your people. No, fair is fair. And it's like we can be common human beings and engage, but you will not be abusing me. That was his biggest gripe, I think, in the piece.
Matthew?
I think that he's really trying to understand, and he's standing on the fact that violence never stops violence. And that's Martin's biggest disagreement with Malcolm.
Because basically they're trying to convince a white audience, right? And Malcolm X might be a little threatening to a white audience that doesn't know black people.
But you know what, though, Steve? I think that in the piece, Malcolm will be threatening to a white audience who's not listening.
Mm.
But if you're listening, you'll hear in there a certain logic that says, "Yeah, if somebody was going to aggress or hit my kid with a brick, I would defend my kid too. Or if somebody was beating my wife, I'd defend my wife too." It's kind of a common sense, you know. It's kind of a common just human decency, you know. I think the distinction to be made is that what and this is the way I kind of describe it. I think that what Malcolm was espousing was more so a secular agenda. And what King was espousing was more so an ethereal agenda mm-hmm. of the spirit, of doing what's best for your spirit, for your children's spirits, and what have you.
The Black Rep presents Jeff Stetson's The Meeting. It's up and running now through January the 26th at the Emerson Performance Center at Harris Stowe College. If you'd like more information, go to stlpublicradio.org to the Cityscape page, and we'll have a link to the Black Rep's website real quick. Quickly, Ron, I just want to give you a few seconds to promo the rest of your season.
Well, as you said, the meeting runs through the 26th. Next up, we move from the Emerson Performance Center at Harris Stowe to the History Museum in Forest Park, where we will present Entezake Shange's For Colored Girls Who Have Considered Suicide When the Rainbow Is Enough. It opens January 29th and runs through February 9th.
And in April, you're on stage.
In April, we move back to the Emerson Performance Center for a production of Wale Soyinka's The Trials of Brother Jero.
And how do you like your new space?
It's very nice. We like it a lot. It's got great parking, and the audience loves that a lot. And they love the comfort of the theater. And it has a lot more intimacy than the old theater.
That's Ron Himes, founder and producing director of The Black Rep. We've also been talking to Matthew Galbraith, who's playing the role of Dr. King, and Karamu Kush, who's playing the role of Malcolm X in the current production of The Meeting. And as a takeaway, what do you think? I guess they both had the same goal. They went about it in two different directions, but maybe it took two different perspectives to reach the one common goal.
Mm. Mm. I agree.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Malcolm says it to Martin in the play. He says, you know, if they kill me first, you'll have nothing to negotiate with.
Wow.
If they kill you first, they can't let me live.
Hmm. Well, that's a powerful line.
Right.
Truly.
Thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you.
We'll see you in the theater, right?
Right. Coming up next on Cityscape, video artist Lacko Chosich. This is St. Louis Public Radio.